Hey, Internet, he's John, I'm Mark, this is the Enthusiastic Cast, the web show where we endorse one book that we are excited about. This week, I'm enthusiastic about Bitter Seeds by Ian Tregillis. John, you said to me a few months ago that January, February is the publishing world's armpit. In the fall, it seemed that every Tuesday there was an embarrassment of riches in terms of what was being published. You were talking on the blog regularly about how you couldn't find the time. So here we are. It's mid-March. Are you excited about new releases again?
It's starting to pick up. January and February. My God. I don't know if I said armpit, but it's like it's the same as movies, right? It's a dumping ground. You get a lot of self-help and diet books. I didn't see anything that I was excited about. Swamplandia apparently was really good. But that was about it. So, yeah, I am excited again about books. I've got a few that May seems to be a really good month, actually. So I've got a few here to talk about. What about you?
Oh, man. So, like, I was like, oh, am I excited? I'm not sure. So I, like, go to Amazon. I type in, like, the next couple months. And I'm just like, what's coming up? Like, what's going to be awesome? And it's like 111,000 hits or something like that. And I'm like going through them page by page going, I have nothing to say. I have nothing to say. I have nothing to say. So I ran away to the bookstore this afternoon and just kind of browsed and was just trying to get excited about what was out there. I'm not gonna lie to you. It was kind of sad making, right? Like I went to one of my favorite stores here in Toronto, and the shelves were sparse, right? Like it's just not a good time to be in book retail, right? It's just kind of sad. So I poked around. I was trying to find some stuff. I saw one thing. Are you like how many books do you have that you want to talk about? Do you have like three or do you have five or how many do you have?
I have six.
Six. You're gonna kill me if we go one for one here.
All right.
So I don't know how best to do this. I'll just tell you. I was in the bookstore today. I ran across The Information by James Gleick. James Gleick is to science writing what Michael Lewis is to like sports and financial writing. He's a science reporter and he wrote
I've been hearing about this book. It's sort of about information overload and how to make sense of the modern world, right?
Right. And like everyone that works at an ad agency that with somewhat punditry is coming forward with a book like this, like Email's Bad for You or whatever. And this thing is like 600 pages. I've read Gleick before. I know his style. I was excited about that book. That's not upcoming. That's just possibly upcoming on my list. So what's your number six?
Well, it's actually my number five is two books. So that's where I get the six because I put these together because they're basically just it's follow-up enthusiasm to enthusiasm I've already had. So back in episode 25, I was enthusiastic about Lawrence Block, the crime writer, and particularly his Matthew Scudder books. And on May 12th, there's a new one called The Drop of the Hard Stuff, which is set in the past. And it's a Matthew Scudder novel, and it's set around the same time frame as When the Sacred Gin Mill Closes, which I consider to be one of, if not the best, Matthew Scudder novel. So that's a sold book for me. I'm totally excited about that. It's coming from Mulholland Books, which is sort of a new crime imprint, and they seem to have a lot of talent lined up. I follow their blog regularly. They seem to have a lot of stuff coming out from guys like Charlie Houston and Dwayne Swarzynski. And so I'm really excited about that book. And then in the same vein, going even further back, I was excited in episode 18 about Fred Vargas and Have Mercy on Us All. And Vargas has a new Commissaire Adamsberg mystery called An Uncertain Place, and that releases in paperback on May 24th. Now, obviously, that's not a brand new book. It's just the first North American translation of it because I think it was originally written in French. So that's my number five.
Right.
Part A and B.
So, yeah. So another book that I saw today, we've talked about Jonathan Safran Foer here on the show. His little brother, it's like a family powerhouse. He's married to Nicole Strauss, and his little brother apparently is a novelist in waiting. He's written a book, or he wrote a story for the New York Times about the World Memory Championship.
Okay.
Which he's now spun out into a book. And at first I was kind of holding my nose about the whole notion, but I picked it up today and then I came home and I read a little bit more about it, and it sounds like so he's just like, he was introduced to this world of memory competitions, and it's kind of got like this spelling bee-esque kind of feel to it.
Right.
And he was in that world, got introduced to this guy who's like a grand memory master or whatever, and the guy's just like, yeah, well, I can teach you how to do that in very short order. So Joshua took a year. He apprenticed with this memory master and went back to the memory championship the following year and won for his category.
Way.
Yeah. And so he chronicles this this journey in this book. It's called Moonwalking with Einstein.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And I didn't realize that was Safran Foer's brother.
Yeah. And he... You the cover's really weird and the title doesn't really tell you what it's about, but like, so I was initially put off, but apparently, like, he was saying in the New York Times, it's just like, when you were if you lived in classical times or whatever, you took rhetoric, you took, the equivalent of math, I guess. And then you also took memory. You also went to memory school, right? So the fact that Homer and the pre-Romans and stuff could all remember huge long spans of poems and that was actually a skill taught to them in school. And so these memory champion guys kind of look to revive those classical skills. And yeah, so it just like piqued my interest, and I'm slotting that in as my number four.
That's really interesting because I remember that title. And there was nothing about it. I remember the title, but there was nothing about it that hooked me in. And yet the description that you just gave is totally interesting.
Yeah. And apparently like the women grandmasters memorize things differently than the male grandmasters and stuff. So like there's a couple layers. I don't know if it's like better than an 8,000 word like magazine piece, but it caught my interest.
All right. My number four is kind of a cheat, kind of not. It's a cheat if you're an American listener because it was released in the U.S. About a week and a half ago. It has not been released in Canada, and I don't know if it is going to get a release in Canada because it was published by the Library of America, but it's At the Fights, American Writers on Boxing, and it's a collection of 100 years of the best fiction and reportage on boxing by American writers. So you've got Norman Mailer on The Rumble in the Jungle, you've got David Remnick and Joyce Carol Oates on Mike Tyson, and I'm kind of a fight fan, and I'm also a fan of fight fiction. So
have we done any, like, have we been enthusiastic about any sports books?
I don't think that we have, but I might have one coming up.
We should do that, definitely.
Yeah. So if and when I can ever get my hands on this bad boy, I'm enthusiastic about this.
Sweet. So I'm enthusiastic about Divergent by Veronica Roth.
You just stole my third.
Oh, okay, cool. So do you want to take it or?
Go for it.
Well, I don't have much, right? So it's a dystopian YA novel. There's five factions in post-apocalyptic Chicago. It's like a caste system. You grow up in your caste, but when you reach the age of 16 or 19 or something like that, you're given the choice of leaving your caste and kind of betraying your family history. or you know, staying with the family and being, you know, having the knowledge passed down to you or whatever. And so the main character in this, I think, is called Beatrice Pryor. She's a young girl, very much like the Hunger Games. You know, 16, 17, very precocious. And she's grown up in the selfless caste, and she chooses to break away and join the Divergents, who are kind of like the tattooed punk rock stars who guard the city, right? They're the guardians, and they're the action-oriented rock stars of the bad boys, so to speak, of the caste system. And this looks like it's going to be a huge series. She's doing three of them. They're doing the movies, the whole thing. And so I got wind of this pretty much the same time you did, John, and haven't dived into it yet, but I'm keen to do that.
Yeah, no, I'm absolutely looking forward to this. I mean, the buzz is that it's the new Hunger Games. That, of course, is going to be the buzz phrase for most of these books, right? I think anything that is post-apocalyptic YA is going to be called the new Hunger Games, but it seems like I might actually have some meat on the bone in this case. And it just, the description that you gave is very apt and points up all of the, that this is just checking the boxes on how these things are done, right? She's separated from her family. She makes a shocking choice. She's action oriented teen heroine. I believe there's a romance in this, and he might be right for her, he might not be right for her, and of course ultimately the fate of her whole society is going to rest on her shoulders. And that kind of thing done well is freaking awesome. So you know, I hope it pulls it off. I'll be checking it out to see one way or the other.
Yeah, or you know, big sad disappointment too. Why don't you just move on to your number two?
My number two, okay, this is going to be kind of an oddball one. It's my token comics reference for the list of things I'm excited about. And it's Hikaru no Go, Volume 23, by Yumi Hata and Takeshi Obata. Takeshi Obata is the artist. And it is the final volume in a manga series called Hikaru no Go. And I've been following it for about 6 years. And it just came to it in a weird way. I don't know. Have you ever heard of Naruto?
No.
Okay. Well, Naruto is an anime and a manga. Anime, Japanese cartoon, manga, Japanese comic book, and it is the best-selling comic book in the world, probably. And years ago, I stumbled across that fact, and I'd never heard of it or knew anything about it or read it, and it's serialized in North America. It's collected in little sort of digest-sized manga paperbacks, but it's also serialized in an anthology book called Shonen Jump, which you might have seen at the grocery store. It's one of the few comics you can still get at a grocery store or a newsstand. And so I decided I would pick up a copy of Shonen Jump just to see what this was all about. And, you know, after reading the Naruto installment, I could see what the appeal was, in the same way that I can see what the appeal is of, you know, Pokemon for the target audience and age group, but it didn't really work for me. But there was about, I don't know, 10 other comics in this anthology, which ranged from really horrible to passable, but there was this one called Hikaru no Go, which I got to the end of it. I was like, I have to know what happens next in this story. And the deal is, it's a young boy named Hikaru Shindo, and he finds a Go board in his grandfather's attic. And as soon as he touches it, he's possessed by the spirit of this centuries dead Go master, who now wants him to play the game of Go so that he can eventually play, I think, the divine move and then ascend to, you know, some higher state. And if you've never played the game of Go, it's basically Othello meets chess, and it's cerebral sports manga, and it's totally captivating, and it's totally paced. It's Dickensian. It's totally paced for serialization. So it's paying off for me in May with the final installment. I've been following it for about 6 years, so I'm excited for that. And if anybody has ever wondered about reading manga, this is one that I would highly recommend. Be forewarned, it is unswitched, so it reads from back to front and from right to left.
I think this whole segment just proves what happens when you don't, like, follow a particular genre or follow a particular author, right? Like, that pick is, like, a deep dive, obscure. Well, it seems obscure to me, but, like, self-evident to you and everyone that has followed that kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. And the fact that I'm, like, kind of sputtering around, trying to come up with, like, five things I'm looking forward to would be so much different if I like religiously followed certain authors, which I don't do anymore. So my number one is another YA novel. It's called Shipbreaker.
Ooh, I'm reading that right now.
Really?
Yeah, you were right to be excited about it. It's good.
Oh, I thought it was coming out in May.
May last year.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, Paolo Bacigalupi.
Really? Failed by the internet again. Came out last year. What the fuck? It's a year old?
I mean, paperback's coming out in May. I don't know. Yeah.
Oh, man. So, yeah. I don't know. I was looking at it and I was just like, this looks awesome and looks totally different. Anyway, so it's a YA novel. It's by the same author, the author that wrote The Wind-Up Girl, which was a big phenomenon last year.
Co-won with The City and the City, which you were enthusiastic about.
Exactly. And apparently this is set not as you did, like, as I kind of expected it would be set in South Asia based on the title, but apparently it's based on it's based in the Gulf of Mexico, in post-apocalyptic US. And it's about, as you can imagine, a group of kids, a group of maybe one boy actually, who's a shipbreaker, and so after this apocalyptic event, all these ships have washed ashore on the Gulf of Mexico, and they go from ship to ship trying to extract value from these things, and I guess they come upon a certain discovery that leads them off in a bit of an adventure, but sounds completely different from The Wind-Up Girl. So I thought, wow, he's really, like, he's going YA, he's really stepping off. This really is promising for his skills as a writer, because obviously he's just not afraid to, like, knock that stuff out. So that made me really excited, and now I'm all deflated because it's a year old. Does that pretty much jive with...
That's totally, your description is totally accurate. I'm sorry. You should not be deflated. You should be excited because it's really, really good. It's heavy. It's very intense. I think it might share some environmental concerns with The Wind-Up Girl,
or just
environmental overtones, given that it's an environmental collapse, which has done in the world. And it's very, very intense. Brutal. It's not gory or scary per se, but man, it is post-apocalyptic.
Okay.
So,
are you going to possibly be enthusiastic about The Wind-Up Girl sometime soon?
Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe. Yeah.
So, what's your number one?
My number one. So, this is Robopocalypse by Daniel H. Wilson, which is being released on June 7th, and he's not somebody whose writing I'm familiar with. He wrote How to Survive a Robot Uprising, which I've seen plastered all over HMV since it turned into a pop culture store instead of a music store. And so my enthusiasm for this book, my excitement about this book is entirely superficial. And it's based on the fact that the day before the rights to the book were bought, the movie option was bought by Steven Spielberg with plans to direct himself for a release in 2013. So he's obviously, it's not just, you know, one of his assistants or whatever. He's read it and he thinks that it's great. So, you know, that's a stamp of approval. Wilson's editor is Dan Brown's editor. So someone who knows, you know, compulsively readable, paperback airplane books. And I kind of have a bit of an afterglow still from reading Demon and Freedom by Daniel Suarez, so Robopocalypse, it's totally bog standard plot, right? It's, you know, the robots gain sentience and form an army and take over the world, right? It's Terminator, it's Demon, it's whatever. And yet, because Demon took that really, really standard issue plot and turned it into something exceptional and wonderful, I kind of want that to happen again. And then finally, this book has a phenomenal cover. It is a totally, totally striking cover. People, I think, are going to buy this just off the shelf, just based on the cover. And that kind of thing works for me. So I'm excited about Robopocalypse.
Nice.
It's a great name, too.
So speaking of Spielberg, I went to both the Adjustment Bureau and Battle LA this week.
Mm.
So I took in a little movie double bill. And as a preview, there's Super 8.
Right.
Yeah, the Spielberg, the very E.T.-like Jonathan Abrams, conflagration, which is A, original, and, you know, hey, if you're going to be one of Spielberg's minions, why not be J.J. Abrams, right?
Right, I think this is set in the 70s, right? So, you know, we're going back to Spielberg's most fertile era. It's got all kinds of great expectations.
Well, awesome.
So speaking of things that are awesome, you're going to tell me about Bitter Seeds, right, by Ian Tregillis. I know nothing. The four words that I just said, Bitter Seeds, Ian Tregillis, and I don't even know how to pronounce this guy's name properly. So,
I found this book because I was looking for something in the alternate history genre, focusing around World War II. And in fact, I was actually looking for Len Deighton's SSGB, but I found this instead. So, I don't know if you know, but Len Deighton, do you know Len Deighton at all?
But I haven't read his work.
So Len Deighton was like the Tom Clancy of his time or whatever, but he also kind of fancied himself as a bit of a cook.
Okay.
So he wrote the Action Heroes Cookbook, like back in the 60s.
Which, that's awesome.
Yeah, which became like this like, you know, Hugh Hefner like bachelor pad go to manual for for guys that lived on their own. Right? And I've heard about this book for years and years and years. It's one of the best cookbooks for guys and all this stuff, right? Like, and like Michael Caine has gone on the record and been like, yes, when I did all those Len Deighton films, he was on set. I learned how to cook spaghetti from him and all this stuff. So I found a copy of it. I was so stoked. And I bought it for like $5 the other week, and then was looking up Len Deighton, and they were saying online that, like, yes, you know, aside from his like goofy Harry Palmer films, he also wrote this really great alternate history. And I was like, I haven't read alternate history. So I was Googling around trying to pin down a copy of this thing. And I found Bitter Seeds instead. Now, it's one of those things that I was like, wow. Like, after having read this, I'm like, this is the frickin' discovery of the year. But but of course, because it came up first in Google, like, it's one of those things. It's like
it's your discovery of the year.
It's my discovery of the year, for sure. It was all over the place last year, apparently. And it was a big deal in certain circles, right? So some of the people that endorsed this book and really got behind it last summer are people that I, you know, I follow. And I was just like, oh, I missed this totally, right? So that led me to pick it up. And basically what you get an alternate World War II. And it starts off just slightly off kilter of what we know, right? Like, Franco wins the Spanish Civil War, and like, things are going along fine. On the British side, you have, there's two, I don't know if they went to Oxford, they're university roommates, right? And so they get recruited into the intelligence service. And and one is like the sober, right-headed former, like he's a former street kid. Actually, he's like a poor kid, and then the other one, his buddy, is like this swaggering, dickish, like scion of like this old money family, right? And so the two of them meet, and what happens? One of them gets recruited to be an intelligence officer in the Spanish Civil War, and he basically starts following these really odd phenomena that are happening, kind of like related to Third Reich activity. And he brings in his roommate, and the two of them end up forming this like special unit of MI6 to investigate these odd phenomena. And then on the German side, there's like a brother and a sister who were adopted by this like Joseph Mengele type character right after World War I. So he sets up, his name's von Westarp. And so he is into like human experimentation, and this brother and sister are mixed race. So they grow up to be his guinea pigs, kind of. And then come 1939, their names are Klaus and Gretel, actually. So come 1939, they come to be the source of these odd phenomena, right? So let's just say they become, even though they're like mixed race orphan children, they become integral to the German war effort.
Okay.
And it's the story of the four of them, and you follow the tit for tat as Will and Marsh, the two British guys, are in like this chess game with the Germans as they're trying to figure out what Klaus and Gretel are up to.
And so,
actually, so I should just maybe go into spoilers. I'll go into spoilers.
Well, let me ask a couple of non-spoilery questions first.
Okay.
So I have a very limited knowledge of alternate history, but in this, is the plot more the thing, or is it more this is how things spun out differently on this alternate world, right? Kind of a, you know, but for the want of a nail, the horse wasn't shod, so the horse didn't make it to the battle, so the battle was lost, and so history was changed kind of thing, right? Here's this one change, and then everything spins off, and you get to see how that plays out over sort of a long period of time and how our world is now completely different because of that? Or is it more just, hey, what if this happened instead?
It's more of the second one, right? Okay. So instead of it just being like, oh, you know, what if someone went back in time and killed Hitler and like,
right.
You know, it's not like that. No.
Okay.
It's very much of the premise that, you know, once a weapon is developed, a weapon's going to be used, and once a weapon is used, it has consequences, and then you end up in a different place, if that makes sense.
Okay. Is there anything that you would compare it to that you've read before?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so let me just go into spoilers.
Okay, so jump off, people.
The Germans basically have the X-Men fighting for them.
Okay.
Right? So they...
You know what's funny? When you were talking about it, I'm like, oh, they've got, like, supernatural powers.
Yeah. So this is basically Churchill and his spies versus Hitler with Magneto. And like, you know, Hitler's with Magneto rather than Himmler. Right? Like, he's got a team of ultra-villain, badass dudes with special powers. So Klaus has developed this ability to walk through walls, and Gretel, in this case, is a precog.
Okay.
And then, useful. What's that?
Useful.
Yes. And then there's, like, this evil kind of Xavier School of Doom, where they've raised up a bunch of other orphan children, and there's telepathic twins, and so on and so forth.
Right.
So the Germans have got the fucking super weapon of super weapons, and the British are like, fuck. Right. And so it's like, imagine Glorious Bastards, Inglorious Bastards, Bastards. Imagine Inglorious Bastards meets The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Wow.
Right? On the back cover, it says, this is Alan First, meet Alan Moore. And I'm like, yeah, totally. Right? Like that's on the money. There's also, did you ever read that book, Jonathan Strange?
Yes.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that in there too, right? Because that's a alternative England.
Yeah. With magic.
Yeah, and so it's there's a very kind of, it's not Len Dighton at all. it's not Churchill dropped a cigar. It's basically just all kinds of genre awesome in one place.
I'm sold.
And so, Mark,
you had me at X-Men.
Well, to put this in context for you, right? So, Tregillis is to my 2011 what Daniel Suarez was for me in 2010, right? This has already come up, but it's great fun. It's great, great fun. Now, here's the one thing that you might push you back, right? And I only found this out about halfway through. And that is, it's the first book in a trilogy.
Mm.
And a trilogy that's been delayed at that. Mm. I was like, oh! So,
I might have to. Well, on the one hand, that makes me happy. Because if it's a trilogy, that means that the spoilers that you've spoiled thus far, that there's plenty to come after that.
Right.
So that all the pleasures have not been spoiled for me. On the other hand, nothing kills fun like delayed momentum. One of the things that I loved so much about Demon was that Freedom was out when I read it, and I just boom, boom, read them both. Same thing with the last two, Gibson novels, right? Spook Country and Zero History. I read them back to back, and it really ramped up my pleasure out of both of those books. And then I hopped off The Passage by Justin Cronin. Earlier this year when I found out that it was a trilogy, because I was like, man, look at the size of these novels. It's going to be another George R. R. Martin. It's going to be 10 years before this is all wrapped up.
Yeah.
So maybe I want to wait on this one.
So it's not it's like the same sweet spot as Suarez for me, but it's not the same, right? So in Freedom and that, it's very video game like, right? It's very those set pieces were constructed like first person shooter,
right?
Set pieces on purpose, right? To evoke the video gameness of it, and that's not what this is. The tone and the pacing is there in terms of what happens, but it's not like there's a big hallway battle scene, right? That's not what the author's going for.
But he's not
going for the big meta narrative either. He's going for really rich, character development and stuff like that.
That's great.
Well, you know what it really reminded me of? And again, this is kind of a false comp, but the Trisha Helfer character in Battlestar.
Okay.
Right? So, Cylon number 6?
Yeah.
In Battlestar Galactica? You watched that all the way through, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So, so you spend time with Gretel, who's the German precog. And he portrays her in a really complex, subtle way at times, and not so subtle at others, right? In much the same way that Ronald Moore did with the number six character.
Right.
Right? So you're like sympathetic to her, although she's like annihilating the human race.
Right.
And so you get that kind of same, you get those same beats here.
Interesting.
Yeah. And like that's not what Suarez was going for. But anyway, we're talking about old episodes too much, I guess. It's about 350 pages. When I found out it was a trilogy, I was like, crap, right? Like, this is really going to piss me off. And then I read in the comments of one of the blog posts that I was looking at that, like, someone had got to the end and was really pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I'm going to be really pissed off. And the way it ended didn't piss me off at all.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was 350 pages of, like, solid, great momentum. And, you know, you might want to wait till book two and maybe book three. But I don't know, man. Like, I think that if you put the time in, it will pay off for you for sure.
Well, my favorite kind of genre superhero stories right now are genre mashups. So
this. So this is a first novel by this guy.
Really?
Yeah, it's crazy.
A lot of good first novels lately.
He's done his time in like the short story sweatshops kind of, and you know, he's openly borrowing from other genres, but all in good ways, right? Like all in those good ways that the Wachowskis borrowed from genre in The Matrix, right? It's just like, no, you're ripping that off, but you're ripping that off in a great way, right? So,
yeah, it's all about synthesis.
Exactly.
Shakespeare ripped off other genres. Long history of this.
In any case, that's my pick for the week. Highly recommend it. It will definitely – it's definitely a remedy if you're coming off the romance high.
I think I'm okay. I'm really digging Shipbreaker, but I'm putting this one in the queue.
Okay, cool.
So that's it for another episode of the Enthusiasticast. As always, if you have anything to say about this episode or just some enthusiasm you want to share, you can do so in the comments for the post at enthusiasticast.com or email us directly at hello@enthusiasticast.com. If you're a fan of the show and you want there to be more fans of the show, be so kind as to leave a review in iTunes. That's a nice, easy way to help folks find us. And you can find us right back here in a week's time. Until then, I'm John.
And I'm Mark.
Thanks for listening.
Cheers.